Hi, I'm Siobhan Sarna, and I am so glad you are here. This is SIBO SOS, talking with Dr. Ken Brown, double board certified physician, gastroenterologist, internal medicine doctor. And we're going to be talking about the different types of SIBO. And we're going to be talking about Achmontyl, which is the supplement that he developed that is the only one clinically shown to help reduce bloating. But there's some new research out that he just found out about that kind of makes a lot of sense that we're going to dive into. This is my book, Healing SIBO. Dr. Brown was gracious enough to have me on his vlog, webinar, podcast to talk about it. If you don't have it, it's $20. Well spent. Achmontyl is in the book as well. It's a very inexpensive way to get a lot of SIBO information. Okay, Dr. Brown is here and great to see you. Hi, sir. Hi.
Well, hello, Siobhan. Okay, so just in case we have some Wi-Fi issues, I just hardwired. Okay. So I'm going to turn off the Wi-Fi. So if I lose you, I'll hop back on.
Okay.
All right. Am I still with you?
You are still there.
All right. We're hardwired now. Okay. Hopefully that'll take care of all the little technical difficulties. How are you?
I'm good. My lighting's weird and I don't care. How's that?
That's, you know what? You look great. You look amazing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. So you were just doing some hemorrhoid surgery this afternoon, and we just learned before I hit record some very interesting information about hemorrhoids. I know that's not why everyone joined. We will talk about that before it's over because it is astonishing what Dr. Brown just said, I promise. So
if you suffer from SIBO, especially constipation predominant, then hemorrhoids are a big part. So they kind of all go hand in hand. So
they really do. Dr. Brown, I appreciate your perspective. You've been here on the, you know, on the ground with boots on the ground with clients, patients for so long now. And that really makes you, I think, a different voice within the world of the SIBO community, because how many people do you see a week?
Well, between me and my physician assistant, we see a lot, and it's, I mean, like a lot. I do procedures 3 days a week. I do hemorrhoids on one day. And since I have this fantastic physician assistant, Megan Kennedy, who's understands our protocols, that fully understands the whole concept of SIBO and embraces it. And so we get people from all over, and they've usually failed a bunch of stuff. I talked to Chris Kresser about this, where that's pretty much what his whole practice is also, is just a bunch of people that are desperate showing up. And it's one of those things where you're like, there's no easy fix, and you're always trying to think of new things and always seeing different angles. So
I was just talking to Dr. Allison Seebecker about this today, that there is sort of this sort of vibe out there in the health space that SIBO, there's no cure for it. And that's just not true. There are treatments. There are ways to get better. If you are in the situation where you're sort of have gone to everybody and Dr. Brown is one of the like last frontiers, then yeah, you probably do think that it's never going to get well and never going to get better, but there is success to be had. I just want to give a message of hope, Ken, because so many people are suffering and so many people are digging deep to try to resolve it. Okay. Tell me a little bit about your perspective and what makes it different. And then let's talk about some new research that just came out today.
Well, there's
recently.
So recently there's always research coming out. There's lots of really cool things. I think that today what we can talk about, what I'd like to address with the audience, I'm sure that your audience is extremely well-versed in SIBO. So we can kind of just do the quick visit or.
It's everybody. We have beginner mind. We have advanced people. So let's do our best to cover, get everybody in there.
Okay. Do you want to read your book out loud really quick for everyone so we can get everybody up to speed?
No, I don't. Go ahead.
Congratulations on that also.
Thank you.
I think it's a fantastic book. If you have not read the book, she does an amazing job of going over some very, very complicated stuff in a very plain way so that it's enjoyable and it's fun and it's the easy thing to get through. So I would suggest everybody taking a look at Healing SIBO.
I appreciate that very, very much. I really do.
Okay. So as far as hope goes, right now, like I can think of just a few people in my practice that we say, okay, you have SIBO definitely, and you're just not getting better. So it isn't a situation like that. Like almost everyone eventually seems to come out of it. That's at least what I see in my practice, and I see a lot, but it takes time. And takes a little effort to change your diet, change your lifestyle. And I think a lot of that stuff plays a big role, and we can get into all those different things. That's kind of the protocols that we try and do in my practice, which is, you know, we want to treat this, we want to diagnose it, but mostly we want to address the symptoms. We want to take a good history, see where it's at, see what's happening, and then work our way back to different lifestyle changes that we can do, which includes diet, which includes stress management, which includes sleep, and all those other things that we should all be doing anyways, but it really allows your body to heal itself going forward. And then the big thing that is probably unique to my practice is the knowledge and the people that I'm surrounded with, different PhDs that are this science, this new frontier of how polyphenols interact with our bodies. And I think that is going to be the future of how we end up treating a lot of these different intestinal diseases, is using polyphenols and allowing your body to, or allowing Mother Nature's secret weapon to use these molecules to help you.
Okay, what is a polyphenol?
So, broad definition of all a polyphenol is the molecules that make vegetables colorful. So when somebody says you should eat your vegetables, I always turn around, I'm like, why? Why should you eat your vegetables? Oh, well, they're good for you. Well, why are they good for you? Nobody's talking about this. They're good for you because they have insoluble fiber, most of them. So the insoluble fiber is there. We need soluble fiber and insoluble fiber in certain ratios so that we can have enough bulk in our stool to be able to have an effective bowel movement. There are some trace minerals and vitamins, which are good for you also. But the real workhorse of why vegetables are good for you is because of these polyphenols. These polyphenols are the molecules that plants produce so that it actually protects them. But our bodies have adapted to use these polyphenols, and then our microbiome breaks them down into smaller phenolic compounds, into smaller products that do allow for anti-inflammatory aspects, anti-aging aspects. Certain polyphenols that are in the news now, like quercetin is one of them. That's a smaller phenolic compound. Curcumin, turmeric, those are all polyphenols. There's huge, broad class of these. What we really need to have is large, stable polyphenols that make it to your colonic bacteria, your microbiome, where then your microbiome breaks them down. And that's a really cool conversation that we can get into. But just real briefly, that's what it is. And that's where we're going. I'm working with some scientists in Italy and in Argentina right now who've come up with some very fascinating data to show how these molecules can actually help you. Basically, you're allowing your body to help itself.
We love that. We love that part. So let's talk a little bit about your clinical observations these days for IMO, which, and if you could define that, hydrogen and then hydrogen sulfide, because that was the title of this talk. And then I definitely want to ask you about the research you just read about, and then the genesis story of Achon Teal. But what do you see in your clinic these days as being like, I'm thinking about this, and this is what we tried, and it worked, or it didn't really work, but I'm not giving up hope?
So generally speaking, and I don't want to, I know you've had some amazing experts on, Dr. Seebecker, you've had Dr. Pimentel, Kieran's been on, Kristen of Microbiome Labs, all these people, they are, I don't want to step on any toes there. I'm kind of just in there giving my observation as a clinician that sees a lot of it. So by the time somebody comes to see me, they've usually seen a few functional medicine doctors. They've usually come in with a whole stack of breath tests or fecal analysis tests and things. So for me, to help them not continue to spend so much money, I just want to get to the history and say, okay, what is going on? Where are you with this? How did, you know, what time of day are you feeling? My observation is that when you have an event that then leads to something and you say, okay, I got sick 6 years ago, I've never been right since. And every time that I eat, especially some carbohydrates, and I blow up, to me, that is just almost pathognomonic for SIBO. And that would be argued by some of the academic guys saying, no, that would just fall under IBS and all the other stuff. But this is what I'm seeing, and this is what I'm treating. So the IBSD, or the SIBO diarrhea predominant, which would be hydrogen sulfide or hydrogen, seems to be a little bit more responsive to our traditional treatments, which would be the Xifaxan and things. Now, the constipation, that's where Achon Teal comes in, because we have the one unique polyphenol in there that has been shown to get rid of the organism that produces the methane, the Methanobrevibacter smithii. So that's the one that a lot of people come to see me with, because if somebody comes in and they've never been treated, I love the guy, and I say the guy because they're, by the time they come in, they're just so frustrated, they tend to go to the doctor later. The guy that comes in is like, look, I'm a pilot. I've had several of these. I'm a pilot. I've been totally regular my whole life. And now I'm delaying flights because I have to stop and use the restroom. Mm. When did it happen? Well, I was on a trip to such and such, and then I got sick. I'm like, oh, put them on a round. And they just think that I'm just amazing because they're like, oh my gosh, I'm back to normal. Yes. Now the next step, now comes the conversation. And then we'll do the same thing with the methane predominant, which leads to constipation, or it leads to a different type of dysmotility. I don't want to be nuanced about it, but the methane production actually results in just non-propulsion. So it does lead to constipation, almost a paralysis, so to speak. And those people tend to take a little bit longer. And I set the expectation of that, that this is what we're going to have to do and go a little bit longer. And then with that, there's usually a component of functional constipation where the hemorrhoids come in, where the bathroom use, bathroom hygiene comes in. It's all part of that to correct the whole thing at the same time. Yeah, and, right. You know, so Dr. Pimentel came out with his breath test, the trio breath test that does evaluate for hydrogen sulfide. Mm-hmm. I've been ordering that a ton, using it a ton on people. And I take all breath tests with a little bit of a grain of salt, because sometimes I see different breath tests that people come in and they're very variable. I think that there's a lot of things that can happen with it that can change the results. So I don't completely hang my hat on it, but it certainly helps us when I look and see if there's a spike either further down or very early. And those kind of help us nuance the treatment. So in my practice, if you were to come in and you have this high early hydrogen spike, like really early, I'm going, okay, is it possible that your overgrowth is happening somewhere high in the duodenum and all the medications we're giving are actually not dissolving in the area where they should be, and it's happening further down? And then vice versa. Oh my gosh, you have a hydrogen spike or a methane spike late. Do we need more medication? Because a lot of it is being broken down early in the small bowel. It's little things like that that I really like the breath test for. Not so much to say, yes, you have it, or no, you don't. Because a lot of people get very frustrated when they come in with a classic history. They do a breath test and it comes back negative. But then I say, well, look, your history is so consistent with this. We're going to go ahead and treat you. And almost everybody gets better with that. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I'm different in that, where I treat the symptoms, but I'm kind of forced to. I have a different type of practice, and yeah. I don't order a whole lot of tests at this point. I just need to make sure you don't have something bad. I have found Crohn's disease. I have found colon cancer. I've found celiac disease. I find all these things. So as a gastroenterologist, I need to make sure that you don't have something else. So, you know, we will do procedures. We won't do procedures on somebody that's just had it. I've heard some. So I talked to Mark Pimentel about this, and, you know, being at his institution, when he sees people, he's floored at how somebody will get 7 scopes in 1 year. Going up, mm-hmm. still normal. I'm like, okay, yeah. Well, no, that's the other extreme. But
right. Yeah, I did 2 in a very short period of time, not a year, but because I was convinced I had cancer. And what's today? Like, so in 2016, the last appointment before they went on Christmas break, God bless Dr. Michael Shulman. He got me in and he's like, nope, there's nothing there, Siobhan. I'm like, I was devastated I talk about it in my book, because it's such so strange to be devastated that you don't have a diagnosis. But that's how frustrating it can be when you're like, I don't know what's wrong with me, but something's wrong with me. And yes, it's inconvenient, but there's research that you just read, which solidifies your theories, all of our theories probably, about why getting this condition taken care of is so much more important than we can possibly imagine.
Yeah, so if we were to, everyone has their why, or if you don't have your why, find your why. And your why is that thing that really kind of keeps you, that gets you to get out of bed and continue to pursue something. My why I'm learning is really to protect the brain by healing the gut. And I think that deep down, my biggest passion as we continue to move forward and we continue to develop products and meet with scientists, there's just this theme that keeps coming back, which is if you have inflammation in the gut, it will lead to inflammation other parts of your body, but specifically can be in the brain as well. And we're seeing this over and over again. Now, on a personal note, we all have lives, and there you go through your whole life and you do, you know, you write a book and you do this. And I always kind of joke around with my kids and my wife that I'm not real big into buying things, but I'm pretty loose about purchasing memories, meaning like traveling and eating good food and doing things like that. And I try to teach my kids that I think that there's nothing more valuable than a memory that you can, you know, I tell my kids about, you know, my parents and, you know, my father died when I was, you know, in my early 20s. So they never met him. And then it's just, you know, the stories, what is the value of that? So it just got me thinking, okay, the value of that is priceless. And a life where all of that is taken away, meaning dementia, what is the impact on not only the person, but on other generations? And so this whole concept of my why is ultimately heal the gut to protect the brain. And so I'm always like scouring journal articles. And I was just telling, we were texting a little bit, said I found these two cool articles that just came out last month and the month before. And it solidifies exactly what I'm talking about because people are now starting to look at this. The title of the first article that was published in the Journal of Neural Transmission last month is Small Intestinal Bacterial Overgrowth in Alzheimer's Disease. Looking at the mechanisms behind that and the positive result of SIBO breath tests, then retrospectively looking at Alzheimer's patients and then talking about how this ultimately, it's the inflammation in the gut leading to the inflammation in the brain, which is happening 20 years before any neurologic dysfunction.
And then the next
one is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth as potential therapeutic targets in Parkinson's disease. This one is interesting because basically they're discussing the intestinal inflammation, but as you sit there and watch somebody where their intestinal transit changes, they start developing these gastrointestinal issues, that should be the time to target therapeutic potentials so that they don't develop Parkinson's disease. Now, that's just two diseases that fall in line there. But my belief is that the inflammation that takes place in the intestines, which leads to leaky gut or intestinal permeability, depending whatever wording you want to have, ultimately is what turns on autoimmune disease. I think that the inflammation leads to a handful of other deals, which I don't want to go down this rabbit hole right away. Yeah. But something that I'm seeing a lot of is somebody will develop, let's just call it SIBO. And I don't know what's coming first and what isn't. And then over years, it's almost like an epigenetic phenomenon where we're seeing people with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome plus SIBO plus median arcuate ligament syndrome, Mall syndrome. Then they end up with this dysautonomia problem where they have this tachycardia, they develop POTS. And I've actually had some of my patients, one of them probably for sure is going to join us here. I did a podcast with her because she's kind of made herself a dysautonomia expert. And right. So, yeah, I'm learning from my patients where they're looking into this and I'm being taught by my patients because this whole, what starts out as, oh, gee, you're bloated, could potentially lead to dysautonomia, could lead to severe abdominal pain, it could lead to other issues. And then those are in the people that manifest that, but it could also lead to dementia and different things like that. So
define dysautonomia for everybody, if you would.
So it's like a dysregulation in the most simplest of terms. POTS is a dysautonomia, and that's postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And we see people that will have, they'll stand up, the blood pressure will drop, the heart rate will just race for no reason at all. You don't have proper control of your autonomic nervous system, the nervous system that should be just going on at all times, which includes the gastrointestinal system. The enteric nervous system is part of the autonomic, parasympathetic and sympathetic. And that is ultimately full circle coming back, that once you start seeing that, you're like, wait a minute. So Angie and I, Angie's the one that came on the podcast and she helps me find these articles. She's the one that sent me these articles, and hopefully she's on here and she can answer questions. Hey,
I don't know if she's here or not. I'm just saying hey to her anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, hopefully she, what we're doing is we're working she's back. Yeah. What's that?
Angie Cook. She's here. Hey, Angie.
Oh, she is. Okay. Awesome. So if, yeah. So what she, did the whole podcast on, which is this really good breakdown about this dysautonomia. And we started talking about acetylcholine and everything. And then that comes back to full circle. Wait a minute. Everything comes down to the motility. So when we get back to SIBO, is it a bacterial issue? Or what I'm seeing is it's a motility issue. If you have a portion of the intestine that is not moving appropriately, that's when bacteria can grow there. Mm-hmm. That's when we start realizing we have to affect the motility. So the antibiotics that we use, that's first level. You know, adding the atrantil with the polyphenols, that's right there with it. Then we start going, well, how do we improve the motility? Because without that, you're just going to have recurrent issues. And then we start looking at that. And that really is just level one of dysautonomia, where level 10 could be life-threatening. And so it all comes down to acetylcholine, neurotransmitters, response, parasympathetic, sympathetic response. Very complex, but did it start in the gut and did it turn all these things on? Does somebody have Mall syndrome, the median arcuate ligament syndrome, that then results in dysmotility of the intestines, that then results in, you know, you can start seeing all these Venn diagrams, like your right. SIBO SOS logo yeah. right there with
yeah.
circles coming together.
Yeah. Yeah. My logo. And then this is the intestines on a balloon. Okay. Because they're so bloated. Let me ask you a couple of things here. Which came first, the SIBO or the dysmotility? That's the question. We don't need to answer it right now because that's the million-dollar question, and it may or may not even matter. But I know a lot of people on in our audience are curious about atrantil, have taken atrantil, some super successfully. Some were like, tried half a bottle, didn't really work. Several questions. How did this come to be? Does it work for all types of SIBO? And is it basically like, because it's so rich in polyphenols, is it also just like a great thing for everybody, like who's taking resveratrol and, you know, grape OPC and all that? So how did it start?
I will get into that in 2 seconds because I just saw something that I do that want to address really quick from Naveed Aslam. Naveed, he just wrote that I have gastroparesis and motility issue. That, I love that statement because I get a ton of people that are diagnosed with gastroparesis, which all that means is that the stomach empties slower than it should. And so people will have that. Typically in medical school, I was taught that that is due to a nerve issue, like it's some sort of nerve damage, or diabetes where blood sugar is out of control. Those are kind of the main things that you look for. But now we get all these people that are coming in and they're young, they're like 22 years old. And they're like, yeah, I've been diagnosed with gastroparesis. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because the small bowel, if it gets distended from air, so remember SIBO, bacterial is growing in there. Every time you eat, specifically carbohydrates, the bacteria will break the food down before you can. So there's autodigestion going on. Instead of digesting the food on the brush border of the lumen and then being absorbed, the bacteria get this little buffet before you can absorb it. And then they produce the gas, hydrogen sulfide, or methane. And then the small bowel will distend, hence the bloating, hence the picture of the gut in the balloon there. When your small bowel bloats, it sends a signal to your stomach that says, hey, we're full, we just ate. So it tells the stomach to not empty. So a lot of people are misdiagnosed as gastroparesis, when in reality, if we treat the small bowel, then the gastroparesis gets better.
Yes, yeah, so. I love that. That is so exciting.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that. And then when he said that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I do that in clinic all day long. I have the same conversation. I forgot to even bring that up. Yeah.
Holy smokes. Okay. Holy smokes. That's why we also do prokinetics, right? Is to get that motility, even though it's not a laxative, but it synchronizes the whole orchestra of the digestion.
So for sure, we know that or we know, I should say that, you know, obviously Dr. Pimentel did all the research that I adapt, and I add a few other little tricks that I've seen or played along with. I have the liberty of being in private practice, and it's my own practice, and I can do what I want. So I'll push boundaries and stuff. Him being in an academic institution, a tertiary care center, he's got to be a little bit more conservative with what they can try, unless it's through a research study, which, you know, gladly he's doing quite a bit of that, you know, looking at some different statins and things like that. So when we treat people for bacterial overgrowth, this comes down to the motility issue. I'm much more trying to focus on the motility aspect than just the treatment. Because if we can get people feeling better, I don't know how many people I've treated and they're like, oh, I feel really good. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, everything's back. What happened? Well, probably when you go to sleep, you do not have what's called the housekeeper phenomenon. So whenever, about every 90 minutes or so, you will have a wave from your stomach that just starts like a peristaltic wave. And all it does is just move all the way through the small bowel and shove everything into the colon, which is where you're supposed to be moving everything. So dead cells, bacteria, undigested food, fibers, all that stuff. That is supposed to happen while you're sleeping. And in this leads into exactly how I developed Atrantil. But what Dr. Pimentel demonstrated, in fact, I'll just jump into that real quick. Okay. I met him when he came to Dallas many years ago. I had just started to do clinical research for pharmaceutical studies. And so I was doing phase 3 and phase 4 studies. And he had come to town because he was slowly getting involved in the development of Xifaxan. And he gave a talk, and I sat with him afterwards. I'm like, that is so fascinating. He was starting to show his animal models about how he could take a mouse and put it in a stressful situation, like in front of a cat or something like that, and 20% of the mice would then end up having IBS. And that was where his research really started, where he just went, okay, well, what is causing this? How do I fix this? And then that's when he realized through cultures and things in the mice that it was bacteria. Then looking at that same thing, he realized that these same mice, they did not have the migrating motor complex that was taking place. So that's where the whole concept of, if you're going to treat this, you're not being treated appropriately if you don't have a high enough dose of Xifaxan, neomycin, Atrantil, whatever you want to use, herbal antibiotics, whatever it is that your doctor's treating you with, it must be sufficiently high. And that was shown in dosage studies when he was first developing the whole Xifaxan protocol with that. Significantly better results with 550 three times a day as opposed to the 200 or the 220 that initially existed. So we know that it's dosing, but then as you do that, when you sleep, you absolutely have to help your body heal itself by stimulating that migrating motor complex. And if you have SIBO, almost by definition, you're probably lacking that, because if you have an area that doesn't move well, it's like connection between cell phone towers that gets disrupted. Mm-hmm. Come to this point, but then in this area to this area, it's a lost signal. So then will it just continually happen every single time?
Okay. And a couple of things. He does say that stress doesn't cause SIBO. So just FYI, that was like way back in the day. Remember, this is a lot of it is coming from food poisoning, adhesions, etc. But he did some observations with the military and veterans,
yeah,
and all of that. But I need to ask Joan's question. I have IMO, which is the methane, and as a result, I have constipation. I take a 0.5 milligram of prucalopride, which is a prokinetic, which is that orchestration of the symphony of the motion of your housekeeping wave. She takes it every night before going to sleep. I want to start taking 1 milligram of melatonin each night as well. Can I take it with the prucalopride, or will the melatonin get in the way of the MMC? There you go. And this isn't medical advice, guys. This is just some insight and education.
Yeah, insight. My gut reaction is I do not believe it will affect it. I personally have kind of moved away from using melatonin on a regular basis due to the variability in how it's made and the shelf, how many different melatonins can have variable milligrams going on. If you listen to Andrew Huberman, who's a neuroscientist, he's actually kind of saying that we're taking way too much melatonin And it can potentially disrupt some hormonal stuff that's going on. And so I've kind of backed off the whole taking extra melatonin kind of thing. Knee-jerk reaction probably would not affect the prucalopride, its absorption, or its migrating motor complex. I will say that the migrating motor complex, you have to get into the different stages of sleep for really to allow that to actually completely clean out and take place.
Ooh, so, cool. Yeah. And let's go back to Atron-TL and how that happened, because I know a lot of people haven't heard it. But it's not a prokinetic, Linda, just FYI. It is not. It is that polyphenol that he was talking about. And so how did Atron-TL come to be?
So
I have my bottle. I think it might be downstairs.
I got one here.
Okay, good. And we have a link to the best price of Atron-TL in the marketplace, by the way. Thanks for that. Yes. And Doris just posted it in the chat.
You got the Siobhan gets the friends and family discount there, and she shares it with her listeners. So take advantage of that. I don't want the rest of my team knowing that I'm promoting them to purchase from you, but
thanks, man. It keeps the lights on. This project has been incredibly expensive. So thanks everyone for the couple of shekels that comes our way from when you buy through our link. We really appreciate it. Okay. So how did this come to be? It has to do with a cow. I call it the holy cow.
Yeah. So I was doing the original research. I was doing pharmaceutical research, got to know Dr. Pimentel. He came up with this whole concept of, it's not, IBS is not in your head. It's actually in the intestines. And I'm sitting there and I was one of the leading enrolling sites for the Xifaxan original trial that made it into the New England Journal of Medicine. And he's the one that said, well, the problem is that we'll be able to help the people that have irritable bowel with diarrhea. In other words, SIBO with diarrhea, but we're really not going to be able to help the bloated, constipated person, because the organism that's creating the methane, which is causing it, the Methanobrevibacter smithii, is an archaea species. It's in its own kingdom. So modern antibiotics will not affect this. And so I'd written on my whiteboard methane, and I just was thinking about that, and my research manager, Brandy, came in, and she's from Iowa. I'm from Nebraska originally. And she's like, methane. She's like, you know, weren't they trying to figure out how to decrease methane production in cattle? She was like, I was working with a senator in Iowa, and they were trying to mandate legislation to these farmers so that they could decrease it. And that's for the greenhouse effect, because the methane being burped up by cattle, ultimately they felt that it was causing an effect in the greenhouse effect, and it was part of it. So we started with this bloated cow and then worked our way back, looked at all the literature that was being used in these cattle, and then realized that there was one thing that kept popping up, and it was this polyphenol called Quebracho. And it is a very large, stable tannin. And as I was trying to develop Atron-TL, we found other studies looking at cattle where another institution would then use horse chestnut for a different reason. And another institution was adding some peppermint over there for a different reason. And combining the studies, I went, wow, if we put all three of these things together, these are three natural polyphenols already in our diet, already being used, and they have very specific mechanisms on potentially how it could help. The peppermint, antispasmodic, sort of slows the area down, calms it so that the Quebracho can come in. The Quebracho is a large, stable tannin, which is a subset. It's the largest of the polyphenols. And that works to absorb the excess gas. It works like what we call a hydrogen sink. We know that hydrogen is produced. And so what it does is it sort of absorbs it all, just sort of like a sponge. But it has a natural defense, or it has the ability to get rid of the methanobrevibacter. And it does that just with contact of the cell wall. And then the chestnut actually comes in and shuts off the enzyme that produces it. So looking at these animal models, we're able to show that this is a very specific way in how it can actually get rid of this, of the IBS with constipation. And we did two clinical trials, published them, and incredible results. And so that was 6 years ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago now. We launched about 6 years ago, and it's just grown organically. And our literature really holds exactly true what we kind of expect. I tell people, I said, well, 4 out of 5 people are definitely going to get better if you have, you know, these symptoms of bloating. We're going to fix the bloating. So since we did that, now it's gotten really exciting because now we're starting to see the greater picture of what we can do and how we can help not just bloated constipated. Now we realize that the same mechanism helps with the hydrogen and helps with the hydrogen sulfide. And so we're seeing benefit with that. But the polyphenols, what are really cool is that these polyphenols, all of them, which includes turmeric, curcumin, resveratrol, quercetin, all these other ones that you hear about, they're very poorly absorbed. They actually all go to the colon where they all get broken down. A study that I was just looking at recently looked at green tea extract. So EG that people talk about all the time. And the bioavailability of it was very poor. But once it made it to the colon, then they were able to show that there were 28 other smaller phenolic compounds that it gets broken up into. So keep that in mind, because now we're starting to get into the nuance of how effective this could be, which is also why longer treatment. So when somebody says, I took half a bottle and it didn't do anything, my encouragement is, hey, it's an anti-aging, anti-inflammatory molecule. Why don't you just stick with it and let's see what happens? And then they come back in 3 months and they're like, I'm better. It just got better. Now I know why. And the reason is because we know that when these polyphenols make it all the way to the colon, then your normal bacteria, your microbiome, naturally is built to cleave them into smaller phenolic compounds, smaller compounds that then get absorbed. And those are the anti-inflammatory, anti-aging. And more importantly, it encourages microbial diversity. So we know that if you have dysbiosis, meaning you should have this big, broad, beautiful flora in your colon, the more bacteria that you have with a diversity, meaning they keep each other in check, then the healthier you're going to be. And then when you eat, your body is able to break down these different molecules into beneficial things. And that's where our research is now headed. And that's where we're going. And we're dealing with these scientists that have done some really incredible things. And that's a super cool topic in itself.
That is very, very cool. What if you're diabetic? Is it counterproductive to use Atratil? Somebody's asking.
That is a great question. Oh, I'm sorry. Horse chestnut, peppermint, and quebracho. Quebracho Colorado. So you're probably like, I've never heard of that. Well, that was part of the thing, is that's how we got a patent on it. Because somebody just asked that question. Because the quebracho is the thing that makes it extremely unique. And that is the workhorse. What's really wild is you need to have something which is stable in an acidic environment, stable in a basic environment. So if it makes it through the stomach, then chances are that it might not survive the basic environment of the small bowel. And when we were developing this, that's when we realized this is probably one of the only ones that stays essentially intact as it moves through the lumen of the small bowel. So that's where it can help with the SIBO person. What was the question you had? Sorry, I got digressed by that. But I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you do these webinars. I shouldn't have turned on the chat. Now I'm staring at it.
Don't look at the chat or the Q&A. That's my job, man. That is my job.
I'm going to close my little chat window here.
Yeah, do it. It's too stressful. So what if you're diabetic? Is there a problem?
No, there's actually not.
Questions. Okay, no, yeah. Okay. And yeah. Nut allergies. What about nut allergies?
Oh, now that one is a really good question, because we really technically, horse chestnut is a tree nut. So although it's a tree nut, we don't have the whole nut, because that can be toxic. So we just take out the portion of it that's important, which is the aeschylus portion of it, or the acin portion of it. So, and we tell people, if you have a tree nut allergy, probably not. And I'm not at the point in my career where I'm willing to study that aspect. So right. I just say no. Yeah.
Okay. That's all right. Kind that's of our good. Jerk, so. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. What about the peppermint for people with GERD?
Oh, good question. Also, back to the diabetic question really quick. Yes. Yeah. In diabetes, we do know that these, actually the polyphenols have actually been shown to help with metabolic syndrome, the whole diabetes, obesity, insulin resistance, all of that. So yes, 100%. We believe that, and then also let's talk about SIBO and diabetes. Diabetics will tend to have dysmotility. Remember when we were talking about gastroparesis? Right.
Yeah.
So they can actually have that, which predisposes them to SIBO. And then the inflammation caused by the SIBO results in increased cortisol, which then can make your blood sugar rise and go unchecked. So I treat a ton of diabetics and we end up getting their sugar under better control because we stop the inflammatory process.
Awesome. What's the usual, several people have this question. What's the usual length of treatment for Odontil for SIBO? And can you take it like, three times a day? Is there any harm in staying on it long-term? I mean, it sounds like vegetables to me.
So yeah, so let's put this in perspective. I'll work my way back to what the dosing is, but let's go ahead and put this in perspective. So Eric and I just did a podcast. Oh, by the way, my podcast is called Gut Check Project. So you can see a little bit of what I'm talking about. Gut Check Project, YouTube and the usual places. Eric and I just did a podcast where a study came out of China where it was looking at coffee intake. And what they showed was that they looked at 35,000 people and people that had at least 3 cups of coffee or the equivalent of tea had upwards of 30-some% decrease in dementia and strokes. So that led me, and that study just came out. It made a bunch of news. So I had patients asking me about it. I always love it when patients see something, then they ask me, then it turns into a podcast and then I can go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So that study came out and they did not come up with a reason why. So then I found another study that came out in 2018 done by a Japanese group where they were looking at all-cause mortality and they were looking at metabolic syndrome in the Japanese population. And what they found is that 50% of the people will drink coffee, many drink tea. Those that had a certain milligram equivalent of polyphenols due to the coffee, so you can have anywhere between 120 to 200 milligrams of polyphenols in the coffee. And what a lot of people don't realize is that in the Western diet, many times most of our polyphenols come from coffee, because that is kind of something that many Americans do, but not many Americans will eat the equivalent amount of vegetables. Mm-hmm. So found another study that looked at all-cause mortality, and what it showed was those people and most of this is out of the Mediterranean literature or Mediterranean populations where they tend to be able to track how many polyphenols people have. So this included the use of coffee, tea, and then vegetables. And what they showed was all-cause mortality decreased significantly if you could take 600 milligrams or more of polyphenols, and up to like 500 milligrams, they did start seeing significant long-term chronic health issues, coronary artery disease, hypertension, obesity, diabetes, and so on. So that comes down to, well, what do you need to do to make sure you get your 615 milligrams of polyphenols? Well, that would be 5.5 cups of coffee. That would be 5 bowls of berries, or that would be 2 doses of Odontil. And so.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So now that leads.
We need a graphic. 2 capsules of Odontil, and then all the berries or all the coffee as the equivalent.
So the 2 doses. So it's two in the morning, 2 in the evening, which would be the equivalent of 1,000 milligrams. So now we're getting way over. So. Now getting back to what should the dosing be? So knowing that if you have significant issues with bacterial overgrowth or gastrointestinal issues, then start out 2 capsules 3 times a day. And quick sidebar, what about the peppermint and GERD? That's actually why we recommend it with food, because we were seeing some people have some reflux issues with that. I don't. I take it like all the time, randomly with food, without food. My suggestion is if you have acid reflux, try taking it 2-3 times a day with food. Take it at least 20 days. People will tend to start seeing some benefits at 10 days. Much like we do when we dose with neomycin or Xifaxan, it's a 14-day regimen. And my protocols actually are a little different, where I'll retreat. I'll do it for 28 days, like right off the bat, because we need to make sure that it's completely gone. So taking it 2-3 times a day, minimum of 20 days, you should start seeing some benefit at that point, at least with the bloating. Mm-hmm. Now, if you feel worse before you feel better, that's actually a good sign. That's that die-off reaction. And when we initially launched, I kept telling everybody that would happen and then they would have it. I quit saying it. It seems like people have less of it now. So I don't know if it was the power of
suggestion. We do have someone on Facebook who said that she blew up and was super miserable after taking it. And so she was just wondering why. So I think that's great.
That's,
I mean, I'm sorry that happened. I don't think that's great. But ahead and explain what happened.
Yeah, so what probably happened is that when you actually took it, you had such a load of probably the methanogens. You had such a load there that as these organisms die, they actually expel like their innards, toxins, things like that, which causes an inflammatory, local inflammatory reaction. So some people get worse before they get better. The ones that are my patients and I warn them about it, they get really excited because then they realize, oh, well, I'm winning here. I'm making a difference. There are some people, and this is the group, I've got a handful of people that they're like, man, I take it and I get super, super, super gassy, like 3-4 days into it. Not so much bloating, but gassy. And what that tells me, or maybe we could talk to Kieran about this, which is probably your microbial diversity is narrow and it's struggling to break down these polyphenols, which is probably why you get so gassy after certain vegetables, which is probably why certain foods will do this. And in that case, that is, stick with it. Eventually, the microbiome will adjust and grow. Same thing that I see when people come from a different country and they come here. Oh my gosh, they're like, all right, this is horrible. You guys eat, I've actually heard this, it's really funny. In their country, and we could talk about all different countries they come from, but there are certain countries where the foods are very consistent. And they come over here and there's like, what's going on? I mean, we'll go to Chinese one day and then the next day we'll go have Mexican. And then the next day, like there's no consistency to let your body get used to the foods, as opposed to, let's say, Israel, where it's usually some of the hummus and the different things and a meat and a chicken, and it's some variation thereof. So that if you are feeling worse, my suggestion is to back off the dose. We do this sometimes, let your body slowly adjust to it and then go back up. But 99% of my patients will take 2-3 times a day and have a pretty good result. Then that comes down to, well, what then? I'm feeling better. And we learned all about these polyphenols and everything from my patients, because I was seeing all these people that would take it and I'm like, oh, you feel better. That's great. And they go, yeah, but I'm going to keep taking it. I just like it. I just feel better on it. And I was like, because we didn't develop it for that. We didn't know anything about how beneficial this could be long-term. I was doing it strictly for the symptoms. And that's when we started meeting with these different scientists and looking at different things. And so taking it to get your polyphenol dosing, which is the antioxidant, the anti-inflammatory, we can get into all the aspects of protecting the brain and all that other stuff. I'll get into that study. I'll tell you about this really quick in a second. But then it comes, then we get into the, after you do that, if you're taking it on a regular basis, the people that have food sensitivities, like this guy talking right here, that has a gluten sensitivity. Mm-hmm. So we realize that these same, actually the quebracho itself forms a film over gliadin. So people that have a gluten sensitivity can actually take Atrantil with it and tend to do better. And we were always wondering what that mechanism was. We had a PhD on the show that's what her thesis was very specifically how quebracho binds to gliadin and nullifies its effect as
an
antigenic molecule. Yeah. Like all this stuff has gone on as, you know, I'm sitting here just trying to treat bloating and I'm like, holy cow, wait a minute. We're onto something much, much, much bigger. Like this is why I'm saying that this whole frontier of we're going to be shifting and protecting the gut brain access through this is the key.
That's amazing. So what about probiotics? So people are asking, look, I'm going to take Rifaximin. Can I take Atrantil while I'm doing that treatment? And we're going to wrap up in 9 minutes, everyone. Don't hate me because I couldn't get to everyone's questions, but Dr. Brown is so generous to give us his hour. I appreciate it. So
I mean, I have time. If you want to get to questions, it's not.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Okay, great.
I have no more hemorrhoids to treat today. So,
okay.
Yes. So I treat, so if we're going to, so I printed it out. I did kind of a mad dash of printing a bunch of stuff. I didn't know which way we would go and I can. So like my protocols that a lot of doctors call and ask me. So like I frequently will use Otrontil, Xifaxan, Neomycin, and Motegrity, Prucalopride on the routine. But remember, I treat really recalcitrant people. So these are the people that come in and they've usually seen a few people. And so, yes, I do both all the time. I think I'm still one of the leading Xifaxan prescribers.
Wow.
Because of that. And I have really good success with that.
And on Linda saying on your site, I think it read not to do any probiotics other than the spore based at the same time taking Otrontil. What is your comment on that?
So I'm initially, it was all about the fact that when different protocols were being done by different doctors, so Dr. Pimentel, Dr. Satish Rao, people like that, what they were showing was that the probiotics probably were not beneficial, could be hurting. And then Dr. Rao came out with that study where he showed that those people that took probiotics that had SIBO had an increased incidence of anxiety and some mental stuff. And then he showed that it had increased lactic acid, which crossed the blood-brain barrier, resulted in some anxiety. At least that was the study that was published. My deal is that if traditional probiotics worked, then I probably would not have a practice because everybody's tried at least 50 of them. And traditional probiotics, I tread lightly here because a lot of people really like them. And I'm just going to say, if it works for you, awesome. Keep taking it.
Because it does work for a lot of people.
Yes.
Traditional ones, right?
Yes.
It does work for a lot of people. You have to try it for yourself.
Yes. The data in our literature shows that at 6 months, most of the studies have determined that the probiotics are equivalent to placebo. That being said, that's our society statement.
Yeah.
So that's the American College of Gastroenterology Society statement. So that being said, we know that we've had drug reps come in and they want to talk about VSL number 3. It has to be refrigerated because it's so powerful. If you go to Whole Foods, there's a whole refrigerated section of probiotics. And I just asked their scientific liaison and I'm like, it's so powerful. It has to be refrigerated. Yes. I'm like, are you saying that it can't survive room temperature? Well, I'm like, how does it survive 98.4 degrees in an acidic environment, in a basic environment with pancreatic enzymes then? Oh, okay. So it's just a matter of if it helps, great. But the logic there is a little hard for me to wrap my brain around the fact that you need to keep it refrigerated. Otherwise, it may not survive. How does it survive in the intestines? All right. So now, that being said, I'm working on, we have something really cool. We're actually coming out with Otrontil Pro for only healthcare providers.
Okay.
We've teamed up with the scientist Kieran and company, and they've come up with three very specific spore-based biotics that...
Kieran Krishnan, right? Mm-hmm. Our friend from Microbiome Labs.
Microbiome.
Who I will be talking to on the 21st. I have it written down. What time? Just let me do this... is that right? At 3 p.m. Eastern time. He's been doing some, he's done a SIBO presentation for us in the past, and then he's sort of been making the rounds, and I even sent it out with somebody else who was the host, and I'm like, you know what? I want to talk to him. I have questions. So yeah, he's coming on, same thing, 3 o'clock, the 21st Eastern time. Go ahead.
Yeah, so a lot of what I'm saying about probiotics is when he came on my show, and I picked his brain on it, and he's saying all this. He was the one that goes, did it ever make you go, that it has to be refrigerated? And I'm like, good point. So these are not my novel ideas. This is actually, him coming out with that. So the spore-based ones. So we've come up with a combination called Otrontil Pro, which we are just launching only for healthcare providers specifically because it is the combination of polyphenols plus a spore biotic. Three in particular, which have been studied, that have certain abilities, at least in the literature, to show how it can use the polyphenols as fuel. The polyphenols do not affect it. And then when it germinates in the colon, and Kieran will tell you all about how these spore-based ones germinate right when they hit the ileum because it's the right environment, then they send signaling out to improve the microbial diversity, which allows these polyphenols to then get broken down more into these beneficial things. And so this is where all this literature now starts piling on top of each other. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is making total sense now. So the whole spore-based aspect of it is what I like for probiotics. So there was, I just pulled up an article where I was looking at Bacillus subtilis, which is one of the ones that we are using in here as a spore. And they, a company was trying to, or a research group was trying to see if you made coffee with the spores, would the boiling destroy the spores? And then they put it through a digestive tract, meaning the exact HCl protease enzymes, and then ultimately fermented it. And what they showed is that the Bacillus subtilis in coffee, now remember, I just got done saying that the coffee is polyphenols.
Right.
When they made it, 95% survived the heat process. Then they put it through a digestive tract and it remained at 95%, completely survived the acid, the base, and the pancreatic enzymes. And then when they fermented it, meaning when they put it with other bacteria, it germinated and immediately it had a tremendous boost because it used the polyphenols that it had ridden down with as fuel. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, this
That's
is getting
exciting.
Super, super cool. Then what they did is they took traditional probiotics, a lactobacillus and another one, I don't remember what it was, but basically the most common ones, and they made coffee with it. So they put it through the coffee making process, the heat and everything, and then they cultured it, and 0% of the probiotics survived that. So they said, okay, then they put it through their digestive tract and 0% made it to the colon. It didn't survive that either. So what they're able to show is that a spore-based version of a probiotic can at least, and this is where I hang my hat, can at least make it to the colon where it will use the polyphenols as its fuel. So it uses the polyphenol as the vehicle. In our case, the Quebracho, so the Atrantil Pro, the Quebracho, plus these three different spore-based biotics, it basically rides to the colon where then it germinates and then it uses the polyphenols that it rode down there with as immediate fuel to break it down. And then that starts becoming more of the natural things that you want.
That's cool.
Now let's talk about why would probiotics still probably work in some people. Maybe it doesn't have to make it all the way to the colon. Maybe the local effect in the small bowel, it can be very beneficial. Maybe that's why some people benefit from it. My problem is that people that choose to purchase Atrantil, many do have SIBO, and we don't really want the SIBO people adding more fuel to the fire, at least initially. And so that's my long-winded probiotic. If it works for you, that's awesome, but maybe it could be doing more harm. So just keep that in mind.
Well, and then if you go to Jason Horlock's website, Probiotic Advisor, he has studies there that show that it does help with IBS. Some do help with IBS symptoms. So it's so personalized, you guys.
This is totally your
microbiome. Yeah. This is your fingerprint. This is your ever-changing microbiome. Eric, I'm sorry I didn't get your question earlier. Dr. Brown, what do you think about the food marble?
Oh. I have to watch my language on your show. I tend to be a little more colorful on our show. I was going to say a few things. Yes. Oh my gosh. I totally forgot. That was turned on to me by a patient.
Yeah.
And they are having incredible results with it. So I just sent an email to them and then they're in Dublin, Ireland.
Oh,
we ended up having a conference call with all of their people, the CEO, their IT people, and they sent me one and they're going to come on the show here shortly. I completely forgot about that. I've just gotten so busy. Yes. I think that could be a game changer. I think that could be super fun. I have not used it myself. My patients have told me that they are modifying their diets significantly because of it. And
Oh, yeah, baby. That's cool.
Really cool. I just had one that, oh, my gosh. And getting into the whole Ehlers-Danlos, Malls, I learned about this from one particular family that I have where they almost the whole family is presenting with SIBO, Ehlers-Danlos, Malls, to the point where they're teaching me, to the point where they're telling me which surgeons to use and all that stuff. And I got an email from the dad. He said, hey, I had some dental work and, you know, unfortunately they put me on a bunch of antibiotics and I just checked my food marble and I'm starting to slip into this and I'm feeling it, da 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 da. You know, can we jump on this early? And so his warning sign was the food marble, saying that he's having a change in his gas production on the foods that he normally could tolerate. So,
that's cool. That's very, very cool. I'll try to get, will you hook me up with them so we can?
Yeah, I will. Super cool people. Super, super, super cool. Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm half Irish, so.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, thank you for reminding me. Oh my gosh, I feel like a jerk.
Thank you. No. That's our great audience here. Okay. Any ingredients in atrantil contradicted or contraindicated for atrial fibrillation? Atrial fibrillation.
You know, the only thing that I tell my patients is that if you have atrial fibrillation and you're on a blood thinner, if you have had an organ transplant and you're on anti-rejection meds, those are what we call very narrow therapeutic window medications. And since we have not studied it in conjunction with that, my recommendation is to not take it together. And that's not for anything other than it just hasn't been studied. And as a physician, I don't feel comfortable saying that. Sure. If you're on atrial fibrillation and on aspirin alone, or even, you know, probably, well, Plavix kind of falls into that, but mostly like the simple anticoagulants, there should be no contraindication with that. Once again, it's poorly absorbed for a reason. That's what we want, is for it to be poorly absorbed, make it to the colon where the microbiome then starts utilizing it for what it's worth. Mother Nature's, you know, sort of secret weapon. So
very cool. From Laura, for MCAS patients, that's mast cell activation syndrome, which is related to histamines and all that, everybody, that they take quercetin and cromolyn. How does Dr. Brown recommend taking atrantil in combination? Laura loves atrantil and has been a lifesaver for me. Awesome, Laura. That's exciting. Do the polyphenols. Somebody else was saying, I have MCAS. I'm not supposed to do polyphenols. I don't know.
Oh, what? Really?
I don't know. I'll try to find that. It sounds
I have a ton of MCAS people. I have all the way from, so that's the mast cell activation syndrome, all the way to mastocytosis, which is actually becomes a malignancy where it does that. No, I use, so quercetin, the thing about quercetin is it's a polyphenol, and believe it or not, it's actually poorly absorbed. So its role in blocking the histamine, I don't know the exact mechanism of how it would do it on the local level. I use a lot of cromolyn. I use a lot of H2 blockers in my mast cell activation people, and they're all on atrantil, and they tend to do better while being on it. I think that, remember, as you have anti-inflammatory components to this, so you have immune regulation, the mast cell is an immune cell, which is, when it's stimulated, will release histamine and a few other inflammatory mediators, and that's its job. The histamine actually is there to try and increase local swelling, increase blood flow, so that if there is an injury or something like that, it's there to try and bring in soldiers to heal, to fight, to repair, to get rid of. And so it's all part of it.
All right, guys, sorry about that. What is a food marble? Apologies. Food marble is this new device out of Ireland that can check your gut gas levels. And it's brand new. We're talking to Dr. Brown, cutting edge here, and I'll try to get them to come on so they can explain it. But it's like for lack of a better discussion, it's like a personalized on the spot breath test. I don't know anything else. We will find out.
Okay. So my man,
I got so much else to talk to you about though, man. So I know you're excited about that.
Super quick. It's tied to your phone. It's an app. You breathe into a little thing like this big, and then your phone goes, it picks it up. It's Bluetooth to your phone. It's awesome.
Some people do feel that atrantil has been enough for them to get rid of their SIBO. I found that to be true. People say that in the Facebook group. So what's the shelf life of atrantil?
So the FDA requires us, or the whatever, the FDA, FTC, whoever it is that does this, you have to put a shelf life on something, because that's just part of all supplements, all drugs, all everything. We've got a 3-year printed shelf life. I have been taking markedly expired Atrantil because I take all this stuff that, you know, that we can't sell. And I take it. They have shown there was in World War II, the remember that we work with the people that supply this directly a lot. And so we get to hear all these stories. There was a World War II, the United States had purchased a bunch of Quebracho because it's used in winemaking, food preservation, beer making. So they stockpiled some Quebracho that was like 30 years old. And these guys brought it back. And then they did a mass spec on it. And it had completely unchanged after 30 years. So technically, it's probably good for a very, very, very long time. The bottle will tell you that 3 years after manufacturing is when you're supposed to not sell it.
Okay. It's okay. So we're going to go rapid fire here. What about parasites? A lot of people have parasites, and Dr. Gervich, Alana Gervich, likes to treat those first. But, and you know, a lot of people don't want to admit they have parasites, blah, blah, blah. So what's your deal with parasites?
I'm going to admittedly say that my bandwidth has not allowed me to really dive deep into that. And I'll tell you that traditional medicine, which is how I'm trained, traditional medicine says that they probably are not an issue in the U.S. I just admittedly defer to the people that are better at it.
Okay. A lot of GI doctors say that or feel that way or actually in that position and don't say that. They do the Quest or LabCorp stool test, which is not that sensitive. And then you get the results. Oh, look, you don't have parasites. But then if you go to ParaWellness, GI Map, the Vibrant Health, where they do test for parasites, there they are showing up. So it's Dr. Ann Hill, Dr. Alana Gervich, both of them have masterclasses at SIBOSOS.com under the courses where they go over what you need to know for that very thoroughly. So please check
those
out.
That's great. Yeah. And I will say this, I think one of the reasons why we're really bad at finding it is that it is a skill to look for the trophocytes, look for the eggs, to do that. And it actually requires somebody sifting through stool and being good at it. And if it's going to be done the traditional way where you send the stool over there. Now I know that like Vibrant may have the ability to do it through a genomic sequencing and stuff like that, or PCR, which is different.
Right. So that's literally why I did masterclasses on that with those doctors, because they really deal with it all the time. So that's Dr. Ann Hill, Dr. Alana Gervich. Go to SIBOSOS.com to find out about that. Okay, so let's see. I did this. I did that one. That's exciting. Ajila had the best 3 months past few years since food poisoning IMO diagnosis that happened to be while taking Atrantil. But after a few months, I seem to be back to symptoms and even worse reflux. Have you seen Atrantil work for a few months then stop working? Also, thank you for the explanation on gastroparesis sensation being actually caused by SIBO gas. So definitely suffer from that. So Dr. Seebecker sees people, or did see people because she's writing her book now, who take supplements or take a medicine when they have SIBO, works really well, and then it stops working. Like that's a pattern that she's seen a lot. What about that and Atrantil?
So yes, so I see that with everything also. So we'll see it with rounds of Xifaxan, rounds of neomycin. The reasoning behind it, not too sure, other than is it one of those situations where the motility wasn't fixed and then it came back in a different location? Do we need different dosing? Yet coming back to that thing of how do I interpret a breath test? So I've had a handful of people in the extremes where either very high up or very low. And ultimately, I've had a couple of people that did amazing. And then they came back. They're like, you know, 3 months later, they're like, oh, I think it's coming back, but it's not working as well. And then we increased the dose or we increased the frequency and then it got it to go away. So then it tells me more, okay, well, maybe it's a location. Maybe it's a concentration location thing that we need to figure out. Moving target. And
I
think everybody is learning from everybody else. At least we're just not sticking our head in the sand and saying it's in your head. So yeah, I'm sorry that isn't the case. Maybe I don't know. I mean, you know, we just don't know. It would be really wild. It's going to be fun. It'd be really fun to keep working with these scientists and looking at this and saying, oh, maybe you need a higher ratio of the Quebracho versus the horse chestnut, who knows. So
what do you do for hydrogen sulfide patients?
So the hydrogen sulfide patients, if they've got bad diarrhea, I will treat the same way, Xifaxan, Atrantil, and sometimes I'll add Pepto-Bismol. And I've had some people that have had tremendously fast transit time. So the hydrogen sulfide apparently just speeds everything up. And then I'll actually need to kind of slow it down a little bit, the exact opposite of what we would do. Sometimes I'll add a little bit of Zofran or Dancitron, which is the exact opposite of a prucalopride for the small bowel motility aspect of it. But that's the extremes in cases. It are just kind of protocols of people that have failed everything. So there's little tricks like that that I'm throwing out there had some success with.
Could you repeat the names of those medicines that you take to slow it down?
Oh, well, this is just kind of a little bit of an extreme. So if I have somebody with IBS-D, that's what we'll call it, and I believe that it is due to SIBO and probably hydrogen sulfide, then it'll be Atrantil 2-3 times a day for 30 days, Pepto-Bismol 2 capsules 3 times a day, and then the Xifaxan 550 3 times a day. And then occasionally we'll need some Zofran during the day, not at night, because we do not want to block that migrating motor complex. That one of the side effects of Zofran is it can cause significant constipation. It does that through serotonergic receptors, same mm-hmm. way that prucalopride does in the 5-HT4, the Motegrity prucalopride, mm-hmm. Stimulates the 5-HT4 receptor. The anti-nausea effect of Zofran actually does the exact opposite. That's why it can cause such severe constipation. So sometimes I use that in the extremes.
When people have Crohn's, when people have cancer, how do you feel about Atrantil in those cases? This is not medical advice. I don't even like to say the C word, but I'm just either one. But I just wanted to bring that up because we definitely have people asking.
Yes, use it all the time with good science behind it. So right now I'm trying to develop my verbiage for how we're going to discuss Atrantil Pro with the, I found this article. I got to show this to you. Group out of China is using a spore-based biotic, one of the ones that we have. I think it was Bacillus coagulans. And they're embedding it with curcumin.
Wow.
And polyphenol.
Wow.
And they're doing the exact opposite. They're trying to get the spore to drive the curcumin to the colon. And they took a mouse model of colon cancer and they treated colon cancer with the spore polyphenol combo. And wow. their theory that what they're trying to do is develop a drug to treat colon cancer. So in theory, I treat a lot of that. So let's talk about Crohn's disease as one aspect. Crohn's is an autoimmune process where your body gets turned on and starts attacking your intestines. So we know that autoimmune is one of the issues related to the dysregulation of the immune system. So if you have that going on, then it's only fitting that anything that can help balance the immune system will help with the disease process. Cancer, whole separate animal over there, but we do know that autophagy and apoptosis, meaning that the body sends signals to tell sick and dying cells to go away. Polyphenols have been shown to do that, specific polyphenols. In fact, polyphenols are what are called a fasting mimetic molecule, meaning that it does the same thing as an extended fast on a cellular level. So apoptosis and autophagy is what will help with cancer, and balance of your immune system is what will help with all immune diseases, Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, all that. That's all dysregulation of the immune system.
Wow. All right. Well, there you go. Okay. So we've answered about how do you treat hydrogen sulfide, which is very consistent with the way Dr. Pimentel treats it, the way Dr. Seebecker treats it. What about people with mixed, so alternating constipation and diarrhea?
So same thing. I don't have a particularly different protocol other than I really focus on if they're really tough to treat and it's not the, we're going to learn this with the food marble, but we're going to start seeing. So the food marble checks, I want to say it checks all three. I may be wrong on that. It was just a Zoom call that we did with them. But what we're going to see is that possibly you have differing amounts of gases being produced. It may not be as black and white as you have this or you have this. So if you have mixed, the underlying pathophysiology is the same thing. It's a dysmotility of a certain part of the intestines resulting in bacteria digesting certain things, which cause a symptom. And so you treat the underlying issue and then the symptoms will resolve. So I don't really differentiate, actually don't differentiate at all, because I still use prucalopride at night with diarrhea people. And I still use it with constipation people, because we're not treating the constipation, we're treating the motility.
Got it. All right. I had a right hemicolectomy secondary to appendectal mucosal. I have no ileocecal valve. Just before the diagnosis, I had food poisoning, which led to the discovery of appendix cancer. Oh my gosh. I find natural prokinetics have worked for me for my motility issues. I was recently diagnosed with orthostatic hypotension. Did my food poisoning cause SIBO, or not having an ileocecal valve? Or I'm just saying, could it be both?
Theoretically, it could be both. Mm-hmm. In my clinical experience, I don't see those that have had right hemicolectomies develop SIBO. And that is kind of counter to what a lot of other people will say, that it's lack of that. I don't see that in my clinical practice. And remember that I have lots of Crohn's disease, and a lot of times that is the treatment for ileal Crohn's is a right hemicolectomy. And I just don't see those people developing SIBO. And I think that it's just an observation that I have here, but in theory you can retrograde the colonic bacteria can go up, what's there. So I believe that your root cause is still that you had a gastroenteritis, that resulted in dysmotility, which results in bacteria growing. So I'm sorry you had to go through that, but I think that if you treat the SIBO or the motility, that everything will probably resolve.
Okay, Rachel O, go ahead and take that, Manny, because he's already talked about that. And I know you posted that a little while ago. Mouth breathing, let's talk about that, because I just did a dental health connection summit. I'm a mouth breather because of a nose problem. Lots of air gets into my system for that reason, the resulting gas from above and below. Any chances happening from excess oxygen coming into my digestive tract during and after the times I eat? I was going to ask you this question, anonymous attendee. Do you eat with your mouth closed or open? If you can't breathe, you tend to eat with your mouth open. So anyway, what do you say to that?
Oh, I feel bad for you, because I read James Nestor's book.
I read James.
Breathe. My wife just left. I've got a whole bedtime regimen where I'm taping my mouth and I'm, doing everything and all this other stuff and trying to listen to my brain FM when I'm going to bed and breathing and all that. I think that mouth breathing in itself is just, I would strongly suggest discussing with your ear, nose, and throat doctor what can be done to try and resolve that, because we do know that long-term health benefits of that are probably not very good. Now, as far as breathing, Siobhan is exactly right. If you're eating and swallowing air, most of the time we call that aerophagia. Well, no, we always call it aerophagia, but most of the time it actually causes distension of the stomach, never makes it into the small bowel, and you'll burp it up. And a lot of times it won't even make it into the stomach. I have a lot of patients that have no idea. They'll come to me for burping, and as I'm talking to them, they'll be talking and they'll go, and they'll be like, yeah, see, did you hear that? I'm like, that was not a burp. That was swallowed air. It got stuck in your mid-esophagus, and it makes this burping type sound as it comes out. So swallowed air usually never even makes it into the stomach. It can when you're eating. So you're exactly right. If you're eating with your mouth open, if you're breathing, probably not an issue to digestion based on that, that the human physiology tends to get rid of it before it can actually be absorbed.
Okay. Question for... Bella's asking about SIBO and COVID-19. So Dr. Brown and I have had this conversation before.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Do you see SIBO developing after COVID-19?
Ooh, hot topic.
Go carefully tread, sir. Please.
So I have seen some interesting things. I have seen people flare in their ulcerative colitis. I have seen people have extreme flares in their dysautonomia, in their POTS, not only from COVID, but also from the vaccine. And if we were to stop and think about it, that makes a little bit of sense in that you're turning the immune system on. Both ways, you're turning the immune system on. And if you don't have a regulatory checks and balance, then yes, you can have all different kinds of things. So I do see a lot. It's, would it have happened? Who knows? But it's, I see a lot of people with longstanding issues post-COVID. And it's unfortunate because very clearly it's there. Some of these immune systems are just not turning off. Same thing that'll happen with really, you know, any severe infection.
Yeah. From Betsy, four generations had bowel problems, depression, and vitamin B problems. My mom had Parkinson's. My grandpa and fourth generation were diagnosed with pernicious anemia. Also, B vitamins help make dopamine. Wellbutrin was the only antidepressant. They gave me any relief from depression, and I tried many SSRIs. Do you think there's a B vitamin connection?
All the B vitamins or just B12?
Let's do B12 because a lot of people get blood work done with SIBO and have crazy B12 levels.
Like low?
High, without supplementation. And the theory I've heard was that the bacteria was maybe producing it, but you weren't absorbing it, or it was, you just weren't absorbing it, what you did have. And also, have you had your DNA done? Have you had your methylation checked and all that?
Yeah, I know that's a little bit beyond my scope. Like a lot of this stuff I find super fascinating. And I love people like you that are putting on masterclasses and things, the parasites. I'm not, my experience with B12 is pretty traditional in that you need to have the acid to cleave it from the R protein, then it needs to travel down and get absorbed in the ileum. And blah, 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 blah. So mine is pretty basic when it comes to that. Getting into the deeper stuff, I'll defer.
So Joseph is asking, I do need to go in 6 minutes. Can you take herbal antimicrobials with Atrotil and Rifaximin together? So I'm just going to tell you, Dr. Seebecker says, don't mix your herbals with your Rifaximin per se, necessarily, especially in the beginning, because you want to know, did that work in its own little column? Okay, retest. Did it not go down as much as you hoped for? Whatever. Try a different tack. So if you cross-pollinate the herbals with the pharmaceuticals, she kind of feels like it muddies the waters. And I'm sorry, I'm speaking for her, but I have heard her say this multiple times. What do you think?
And I think that's a very reasonable academic way to look at it. I'm a little bit different. I'm a little bit more just sort of, I just want you feeling better. But that's also, I end up getting that. I end up getting the pilots that say, oh my gosh, I can't take off. Do something now. And I'm like, all right. What are you on now? Do you think that helps? Okay, let's add this and see what happens. So mine's much less academic, but that's also just the nature of who I treat and the people that just have to get on. I have a lot of professionals that just don't want to play the game of let's try this and see what happens. Or like, I'll do anything. So
right. And that's why we love you. One of the reasons. Betsy, about your B12, low B12, check out Ben Lynch's work and Dirty Jeans. I'm not sure if you have. Check out Carolyn Ladowski. She's out of Australia. I think it's called mthfrsupport.au. Genius. She's been in some of my summits. She's amazing. So I would check that out. And Sam E., have you ever taken that supplement? That's what I got for you. Okay.
And I just to show, I see my functional medicine guy at Smart Wellness now. I get like twice a year this insane blood panel, and he's like, you need to take this and this. You're MFTHR, and he goes, you want to read about that? I'm like, dude, I'm so behind on my other reading that I have to do for this. You just tell me what to do, and I'll do it.
Exactly.
I go to a doctor for this kind of stuff, so. I just don't have that time to read on everything. So,
Does B12 feed the bag organisms? I've never heard that. I've heard some polyphenols do deplete B1. What is the effect of the ones you're using? Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't really gotten into the whole B vitamin aspect of everything. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say super quick. I did want to talk about this one thing. So the people that we're working with in Argentina, she did something super quick. I totally forgot to get to this earlier, but remember when I said that green tea gets broken down into a bunch of different molecules? Her thesis was taking quebracho and chestnut, the two ingredients in atrantil, and she put them through a digestive and then followed by fermentation process. And what she showed, this is fascinating, was that the quebracho and chestnut get broken down into tons of smaller phenolic compounds to include quercetin, ellagic acid, green tea extract, urolithin B, urolithin A, turmeric, vanillic acid, tons of these other ones that you're buying smaller phenolic compounds. And so this is the new frontier where you got to have the microbiome to do this. And then what she showed also in her research was that the microbial diversity improved, resulting in significantly higher increased short chain fatty acids like butyrate. So this is the stuff, these are the scientists that we're dealing with now. And this is what she presented her thesis to get this. And so really, wow, I just want to throw that out there really quick, where it just shows that this research is out there and it's really cool, which is one of the reasons why I think that if you continue to take it, ultimately you improve your diversity, you allow for these butyrate to be produced and things like that.
And Steve Wright is our butyrate guy who talks about tributyrin X, who talks about all of that.
Yeah.
What about iron? And you know, a lot of people, we're talking about B12 levels, a lot of people are anemic or low ferritin with SIBO. What do you think about that?
Oh, so yeah, what we do know, so the extreme form of SIBO, remember, so when we were taught about SIBO in medical school, it was the people with blind loop syndrome and things like that. We saw the opposite, which is why I asked, the opposite of B12. They talk about how the bacteria will eat the B12 and drop the B12. And so that's why I was like, it goes up? That's interesting. Same thing with iron. It poor absorption, and so it can actually cause that. So nutrient deficiency, ultimately any nutrient deficiency. So let's even get to the other the B vitamins. In theory, all nutrients could potentially be either poorly absorbed or destroyed before they could actually be absorbed in severe SIBO. So I think that it's varying degrees of bacterial load that can affect a whole lot of different things.
Can coffee enemas cause SIBO? Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I did talk to Gary Stapleton, who owns Aerodiagnostics Labs, very prestigious, or very, you know, prestigious is an interesting word, a very reputable SIBO breath testing company lab. And he felt that colonics was just different than an enema, I know, but could actually be leading to some SIBO because of that ileocecal valve being stuck open after a colonic.
Okay. I don't know. I've not done a whole lot of digging into the colonics. Here's what I do know about this. When we do barium enemas, so when we have an x-ray and we have radio opaque paste and we give an enema, for it to actually make it all the way around the colon, it's extremely difficult. You have to move the patient, you have to do it under pressure, you have to turn a balloon up, you have to forcefully do this. Understanding the anatomy of the colon, it's not sticking an enema in and it's going to end up at your ileocecal valve. It's actually really hard to get the fluid over there. Right. So if you're doing that, you're taking in mass, you're taking a very large load. There is somebody, there was a company that tried to do bowel preps where they were doing, you'd hook yourself up to a machine, you'd get in this little personal enema booth and it would try and clean you out and suck it out and everything. And even that, under high pressure, under the perfect setting, was not cleaning the right side of the colon out.
Wow.
The fluid is not making there. And we can get into the anatomic reasons for that. So that's why I've never really gotten into the whole colonics thing, because seeing what I'm seeing with x-rays, it's just probably only getting the left side of the colon.
Okay. in the chat. Okay. All right. Hey, Clarissa, can you look at Q&A? Barbara is saying that Dr. Ken Brown's practice is not lining up with his picture. So maybe we have the wrong link in the speaker.
That could be a picture that's like 20 years old also. Remember that.
I think we would know. And we just were talking about that. Okay, so listen. Last question. Gastric bypass surgery and SIBO.
Ooh, yes. Lots.
Lots Tons. Of it.
Lots of it. Lots of it. Lots of it. Yeah. And those people, I tend to have to retreat. But they get better. And then they'll come back. It's just anatomy. You've got this Roux-en-Y loop. And so you've got this blind loop that's sitting there, and it can just sit there and just produce bacteria, and it's not being exposed to the digestive juices and all of that.
So they could take antibacterials and via antimicrobials periodically and pulse it. They could do rifaximin in a pulsed fashion. Thoughts on that? Like, how often do you
all
do
of
that?
The above, and everybody's individual. And sometimes when we finally treat people several times, then it just kind of goes away. But it's a lot of it is because of that blind loop. You've got this area there that's kind of connected to the stomach that's shut off, and then it connects later. At least that's the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, which is the one that's most traditionally done.
Okay. So, I just clicked the link, Barbara, that I think it's Barbara. We definitely have the right. Virginia, we have the right. That's the same dude. Yeah, that's
Dr. just 20 years ago is the
thing. I'm with you.
I should probably. These are all those things where you go, oh yeah, I need to update that picture.
Update that headshot. Okay, Clarissa, can you pop the Atrantil link into the chat? Guys, this is the best price in the marketplace. If you would like to try it out, I'd love it if you'd use our link. It really helps support the work. It's very expensive to do this 24/7, 365, which is what we've been doing. We tried to take a week off, 2 weeks off at the end of the year. I sent an email to everybody saying we were closed. And I was like, yeah, but I can get Dr. Brown on. I can't not.
You know what? Let me go ahead and just speak for you here. So everybody that's listening to this, I mean, very clearly what Siobhan is doing is pretty incredible. She's got these experts that are coming on, very renowned experts, even myself sitting here listening, going, oh, that guy, I need to listen to that person on this because they were on here. Oh, this is what's going on. So we're very, very proud at Atrantil to be teamed up with Siobhan, and we love the work that she's doing. And so if you want to try this and you heard all these different benefits that we're talking about, you know, I believe in it. I'm on it. My family's on it. My kids are on it. Everyone I know is on it. All my employees are on it. And I believe that strongly about it. But I also believe that strongly why I'm taking my time to come on here, because she's doing this amazing job of putting these pieces together. And ultimately, every one of these people that you've had on is probably too busy to dabble in these other things. And what you're doing is playing conductor and bringing them on. So one way to thank her is to use that link. And it's a win-win for everybody. We Nice. Get to probably help you in the least of ways, protect your brain. That's my thing. So we'll be coming back on with more brain stuff eventually. And you get to help Siobhan keep bringing people on. So I want to thank everyone that came on. And clearly your audience loves you. You had a bunch of people that joined here. So I just want to thank you for everything that you have been doing and working diligently to get this done. And
Very kind of you. Thanks. We're a great team. Thank you so much, Dr. Brown. Well, many blessings to you. Keep up the great work. We can't wait to see what you come up with next. And looking forward to our next conversation, sir.
Awesome. Take care, everybody. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. Everyone's wondering, how can I get the replay? If you're on our Facebook live that I just just snuck that in there because we really like to do it through Zoom. It will be in the media section or the photo section. You can find all the videos. And if you are here in Zoom thank you. Thanks everybody for the kind words. I appreciate it. We will be sending out a replay. We're probably not going to do a transcript. We're a little bit behind on the transcripts, but definitely watch the replay. And with that, I'm going to stop the recording.